Good morning. If you're listening to the radio, good whatever time of day it is. If you're listening to the podcast, thanks for listening to the Faith Debate, making us part of your day. Appreciate it very much. Do not take it for granted. I am Troy Skinner, the pastor of Household of Faith in Christ, online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Joined this week by Imran Razvi and Daniel Razvi. They can be reached online through their ministry website, conqueredbylove.org. They co-pastor a church in Thurmont called The Church It Meets at Imran's. And I've been wanting to say this the last few weeks, and I keep forgetting, so I'm going to mention it now. We had a technical snafu not too long ago with the show that had the shows end up airing a little bit out of sequence, and the dates got messed up, and so I'm taking a chance by doing this. I typically don't timestamp when the show is going to air. I will sometimes timestamp when the show is being recorded in case something's going to change and we don't want to feel like idiots. Well, too late for me, but timestamping, this show is scheduled to air on January 19th. And for me, that's an important date, symbolic of the passage of time. And there's great significance to the passage of time. And as I examine what it means to have had this passage of time and the things that happen as time moves forward and passes on, we have cleared now the 20-year mark. The Faith Debate has been on the air for more than 20 years. That means we have done more than 1,000 shows. I've been working feverishly to upload a Faith Debate, well, some sort of an upload, usually it's a Faith Debate show, online every day until all of the archives are exhausted. I don't think I'm going to be successful locating every single show that's ever been recorded, but we already have well over, I think, 700 Faith Debate shows that are available online. Actually, as this airs, it might be over 800, I don't know. So we might be in the ballpark of, it's hard to say, maybe 85, I'm hoping we can get as high as maybe 85% of all the Faith Debate shows that were ever broadcast will be preserved online and that sort of thing. So anyway, this wouldn't happen without the support of the listeners, and I don't go out of my way to do this very one because it sounds very insincere and self-serving to bring it up all the time. But and you also can get in trouble if you highlight things that are specific about ratings and that sort of stuff. So I'll be very generic and generalized here. I don't have access to the ratings numbers like I once did. I used to have full, unfettered access to all of the ratings information for the market. I don't anymore. But when I did have that access, this show did very well. Did particularly well against its competition and did very well against its compatriots on the radio station. It for years, and maybe it still is, I don't know, but for years it was the most listened to half hour on Sundays on the radio station. There was a span of time of a handful of years where it was the most listened to show over the entire weekend. In fact, there were a couple of ratings periods where the data indicated, anyway, for what that's worth, right? A lot of people take the data with a grain of salt, but the data indicated that there were only three programs on the entire radio station that had more listeners than the Faith Debate. And we were airing on Sunday mornings. So I don't know if that's still the numbers. I will say we have tens. I have access to data for the uploads on the podcasts, not the radio station's data, but my own personal data for Sermon Audio and Odyssey and places like that. Tens of thousands of downloads of the Faith Debate since I've started putting them there a few years ago. So this show doesn't exist. And also, by the way, was it maybe a year ago probably now or pretty close to that, I had the opportunity to read a letter, or at least share the gist of the contents of a letter from somebody who went out of their way to share with station management how much they appreciate the radio show and how we conduct our affairs and we try to do things with some fun and panache. It's show business after all, but talk about serious matters in a serious way, in a way that hopefully will be sticky and get you thinking and that sort of thing. And the person gave us some kudos, and I get kudos like that in person on occasion. People will occasionally recognize me or my voice and say, hey, you do that Faith Debate show. It doesn't happen that much, but it happens on occasion. And they say, yeah, I listen, and I love when you guys talked about this, and that's always cool. But it's really cool when somebody takes the time to write it down and send it to the general manager of the radio station, because they could take the show off the air tomorrow, right? They could. It's their radio station. And yet they see some value in having this, the show, and they see the value because you support it, you listen to it, and we appreciate all of that. So anyway, that's all I have to say about the passage of time. Anything? And speaking of which, we are recording this show actually. Years ago, our consistent habit was to record the show at least 3, if not 6 months in advance. In recent years, we've been recording the show anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks in advance up to 2 to 3 months in advance. That happens to be where we are now. We're recording the show about 3 months in advance, so the election hasn't happened yet. So I think this will be fun. It'll be a little time capsule, a forced time capsule. This was kind of Daniel's tongue-in-cheek recommendation earlier before we started the show. But so, who won?
Well, they still don't know.
They still don't know. They're still counting the votes.
What? Because this coming week is Inauguration Day.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Right? Yeah. Right?
When, we're recording this in October.
Yeah. And so. It's always, what, the third week in January is Inauguration Day. So Inauguration Day is this week.
They may not have decided yet who's going to be inaugurated.
Oh, they have to. If they decided the last one by this date, they decided this one by this date.
True.
I'm concerned they decided the results of this election 4 years ago. That's my concern.
Right. Well, my belief was that whether Trump himself is or not, I don't know. But I think as a conservative, I believe the signs are pointing to the deep state believes that they can control Trump now and has enough people in place around him that they don't care. And I think they would prefer to have Trump, in fact, because a lot of the patriots will be more complacent and not protest too much about, injustices of government overreach and things like that. I think it because it's more easy to control the population if you have a Republican president than a Democrat president, because the Democrats will lay down and take it anyway.
Now, I've heard some others that I know say something similar to that kind of a thing. And, you know, as recently as probably 5-6 years ago, I would have, pshaw. Are you crazy? Come on, man. But after what we've all been through these last, 4, 5, 6 years, man, nothing's off the table. Nothing. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump could both be lizard people as far as I'm concerned at this point, right? I mean, nothing's off the table.
It's crazy times.
So that, for a moment, just for the sake of rhetoric, let's take that deep state thing off the table. Let's say, because you aren't certain that's the case, right?
I'm not certain that's
the case. So let's take the part of your brain that thinks that's not the case. Maybe it's 5%, maybe it's 40%. Whatever percent of your brain doesn't think that, answer this question. This is in advance of the election. Right now, again, he's not connected to the deep state. Donald Trump is, next week, going to be in office, in jail, in the ground. What's the most likely scenario? Ooh.
I think if he were to lose the election, I don't think they're going to care so much about putting him in jail because he probably won't run again. He won't be relevant anymore. So he may win a lot of his cases on appeal. I don't think they're going to bother too much about it. And I think that if that's not the case, if it wouldn't be for the deep state, then I think that Kamala Harris will win the election because I think there was so much stuff that happened last time that it all was predetermined. And I don't see any evidence that things have changed in the last 4 years to make it less predetermineable.
As of the date of this recording, he has been shot at. And there was an attempt to shoot at him a second time. And between now and the election, who knows? There could be more attempts. So that was the in-the-ground part. Do you think, you think he survives?
We could have world wars between now and then, too. We could have Iran could be no longer existent as a state. There's a lot of things that
People who hear this show might be those listening on the live stream as we're recording it, because we could all be vaporized, right? Like any second now. I mean, things are. I think we're as much at risk of a wide-scale, potentially nuclear-level kind of a war. I think we're as close to that as we've been in my lifetime. And that's saying something, because I think we got pretty close once upon a time.
How many people really have no clue? They're not paying attention. All they care about is who's going to the Oscars.
What they're wearing.
Or not wearing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we're closer now than we were during Kennedy and the Bay of Pigs.
Cuban Missile Crisis.
I think we're much closer now. We've got subs and battleships, Russian and Chinese, on the border of Alaska. We've had incursions there. So at this time in January, I have no idea what's happening. And so we'll have to see.
All right. Let me do a segue here onto our scheduled topic off of this. So let's assume that Donald and Kamala both survived and one of them is going to be inaugurated into office.
and we're not in World War III.
Right. Let's assume all of that. And, you know, Kamala, if she ends up being the winner, is going to be portrayed as, you know, this great heroine figure who, you know, the first woman of color to ascend to that
level. Not Indian, but black.
Yeah, she's going to be turned into this great icon, right? She's going to become a figure. And Donald Trump's already, for those who support him, he's already a figure, right? I mean, Donald Trump jokingly once said he could go kill somebody on Fifth Avenue or whatever, and everybody would be fine with it, right? So, and there's just a little bit of truth to that, I think, sadly. But they would be positioned as, by their side, as heroic figures. So should either one of them be given a statue?
A statue?
Should anybody be given a statue? Are statues okay? Are statues ever appropriate, so biblically speaking, or are statues, biblically speaking, akin to idols?
Well, let's take a step back from statue. I think by statue you are referring to an image of a person.
Correct. Yeah. Like in the rotunda of the Capitol building, there's a whole bunch of
men. So let's take a step back from that, right? Because there is biblical basis for monuments.
Yes.
Things, piles of stones and other structures that are set up specifically to remember times in history.
Correct.
And so the Bible says build 12 stones from the Jordan and put them on top of each other. And then your kids, when they ask you in the future, you can tell them this is to remember the time when God brought us over Jordan.
And those stones weren't chiseled at all.
No. No. But the point is, monuments have biblical precedent, right. So I think that's one.
So the Washington Monument is safe. We're okay with the Washington Monument,
potentially, as it relates to you know.
You might not like the inspiration for the shape it took or anything like that, possibly, right?
Potentially, yeah.
Okay, how about the wall, the memorial wall for Vietnam veterans? That's just a wall with a bunch of names on it,
right? So
is that okay? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think monuments are a problem. I think what the let's look at another example. God commanded Moses, when there was a plague, make a brass serpent, put it up on a stick, hold it up high, and everybody who looks upon it will be healed. All right? So God commanded a graven image to be made, not to be worshipped, but as a symbol of here is God's, God's going to save us from these serpents. So remember God. When you look at that, you remember God. And then it says, a few hundred years later, and then such and such king, I forget which of the good kings, maybe Josiah or Hezekiah, one of the good kings, destroyed the brass serpent that Moses had made. Because, it says, in those days, the children of Israel worshipped it as a false god. So, the idol itself, it does say in Scripture that it can neither see nor hear nor taste nor smell. It has no power of its own, but the power that we give it. And yes, you could argue that there is demonic presence around it and there could be demons that control different things, but ultimately, people are the ones that give idols the power. And I think the context and the motivation behind the image or the monument is very important. Now, I think who you're making the monument to is also important. There's this whole big push that you should tear down the statue of anybody who did some bad things that you found out later they did some bad things. And I wouldn't go there because
got to take down everybody's statue.
Yeah, because
that's your standard, because everybody's done some bad things.
Right, they're all sinners. So that's not the thing. The whole point of the monument is to remember some specific good thing that was happened, or potentially some bad thing so that we don't repeat it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where this thought line began for me, where the beginnings of the thread are, but I think, to the best of my recollection, I think it was when I had friends visiting, possibly family, I can't remember who was with me, visiting from out of town, and when they've never been to this area of the country before, they let them go down to D.C., right, see all the monuments, and maybe go to the museum or the zoo or whatever, that sort of thing. Pardon me as I clear my throat. And so we're walking the mall, and, you know, the Washington Monument's there, and the Lincoln Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, all those sorts of things are there. And I've seen those bunches of times in my life, actually, at this point, and it never really hit me until I saw the one for Martin Luther King Jr. And have you seen that one in person?
No. It's been a while, though.
It feels almost like the Martin Luther King
presence
is godlike. He's emerging from from the stone. He's like he's ethereal. There's some and he's it is huge, by the way. And it, unlike some of the other monuments, which you kind of take them in from distance, this one you're standing like on top of it. It's right there. It's, and it just felt like, wow, this feels worshipful to me. Like, should we really be making these monuments?
I get the same, but I get the same feeling when I go by the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah,
Lincoln is also this giant, impressive figure on a throne, looking out into the distance, and it's a very majestic, very theos type.
It's almost like he's in a Holy of Holies kind of a setting, right? It's kind of the vibe. It's like a Greek version of a Holy of Holies kind
of
thing.
And a lot of the architecture in D.C. was very much Greek-inspired and Roman-inspired. And you got a whole bunch of statues of actual gods and goddesses all around D.C. as well on some of the buildings and things.
Yeah.
And so those I would say would should be torn down. If you're going to remember a specific person for a specific thing.
It's also history. I mean, the monuments are there to talk about history.
I totally get that.
To talk to your kids about history, to learn about history. I mean, the left has been in cancel culture, taking all the monuments down. Even Lincoln Monument they want to take down, Jefferson Monument they take down.
And that ties to the second phase of my thinking on this. So I remember at some point, I think it was that visit to the mall and seeing the Martin Luther King thing. And yeah, you're right, the Lincoln thing. I've had that same impression myself, actually. And thinking, boy, should we even be doing this? And then 5 years ago, there was all the push to take down the monuments, and people were defacing monuments.
And then you want to say, no, keep them up.
Exactly. And a whole bunch of people who would think like me and you guys on a whole slate of issues were very vocal saying that that was wrong. And I'm thinking, do I want to die on that hill? Do I want to invest any ammunition in fighting that fight? Because I'm not even sure that having statues of men that look like idol worship, from a certain point of view anyway, that's even God-sanctioned. And so, yeah, the Washington Monument or, I'm trying to think,
Statue of David.
Headstones at a grave site. That's a monument, a memorial of the person, right? And that they're buried here and it has their name and their dates and stuff like that and maybe a phrase or something that tells you about them. That's a memorial. Like, if we had little carved images, could you imagine how creepy? If we went to walk in the in the graveyards, and instead of memorial stones, it was like lifelike carved images of all these people. That'd be creepy, I think. I don't know.
Right. Well, there is a service, I believe, where you can get your body embalmed and put in a glass coffin and have it made into a coffee table and put in the living room.
A coffee table?
Yep. And so your family and loved ones can stare at your embalmed corpse in the living room.
That can't be real. Who would pay for that? Who would do that?
Crazy people.
Oh, my gosh.
There's lots of crazy people out there.
All right, so I don't know. I'm not going to die on the hill the other side either. I'm not going to take a firm stand and say we should never have any sort of statues of a human, you know, or a creature like a snake that we would potentially risk bowing down to. But I start thinking about it biblically. There are examples of statues that look like men.
Yeah.
And every single one of them is bad. Every one. So I'm like, I don't know. So I don't want, but I don't want to like surrender the fight to the wackos and like just.
It's sort of like saying, you know, people are drunk driving, so just get rid of cars. You know, people are going to be people. They're going to worship images. They're going to worship statues or whatever, and they're going to, you know, lift them up. But that's a sinful behavior. But you can't eliminate history or historical objects because somebody's going to worship it.
And when they do start worshiping it, then there is cause to take it down, and that's what the king of Israel did with the serpent. And I think that was the right move at that point, and they had made it into an idol. So anything can become an idol. Now, we've talked on the show about bringing in statues into your home, a statue of Buddha, and that can invite a demonic presence into your home that you don't need.
What if you don't rub his belly? Is it okay?
I would say it's not. We've talked about this before, and we had some slight disagreements, but mostly we agreed that err on the side of caution and don't bring in things into your house that may invite demonic influence, right? So any idol, truly an idol, can invite that. And I think if you're making it into a god and you're calling it that, that's one thing. If it's supposed to be a specific person and nobody's under any delusion that this is anything other than a remembrance of a specific human person that lived a long time ago, I think it's the same thing as writing a book about the guy. right? You know, for a long time in many places, until the invention of the printing press anyway, it was very difficult to get a lot of printed copies of stuff that would last. And so one of the best ways is to remember things is by storytelling, and having object lessons will be very useful for telling stories. So your children, like God said, your children are going to see this and say, Daddy, what does this mean? And you say, well, I'm glad you asked, because it's this history. And I think that is important. I think something
you were channeling Bernie Beal right there, a good friend of all three of ours. That's he tells stories about as a kid, and you know, and somebody would say, what does this mean? And I'm glad you asked. And then you tell all this history, and so Bernie knows all this stuff.
And I have to give you a hard time because you just said I was channeling somebody. And it's not my intention to ever channel a spirit.
It's just the common vernacular.
I know.
So let's put a more firm religious spin on this, because the things we're talking about are pretty much in what are called, what's called the secular sphere. We're talking about government statues and community statues, mm-hmm. and war memorials, things like that. Protestants don't typically have statues like in their churches and their sanctuaries, mm-hmm. but Eastern Orthodox will. And
Catholics will,
Roman
especially.
Catholics do, for sure. They'll have statues of Mary, of a variety of the saints. And of course, they've got a statue of Jesus hanging upon the cross. Up front and center, in fact,
if you go to Rome and you go to the Vatican, all of the false god statues that the Catholic Church confiscated from all the different countries that they Christianized, they didn't destroy them. They brought them to the Vatican. So the Vatican is full of these Roman and Greek and Hindu gods and goddesses statues all over the place. So that's a whole other thing. But if you wonder why they there's such a darkness there in the Catholic Church, that may be one of the things.
Well, I think I'll say this is a practical thing. I'm not going to get all worked up in arms if somebody puts a statue, let's say in Frederick, of a former mayor or somebody.
No.
But if somebody were to ask me before they did it, do you think we should? I think I would probably say, you know, we can do some sort of memorial, some sort of a thing that represents what their life meant to the community, and put a plaque on it that explains what this represents. But let's not make it a statue of the person, because the human heart is so sinful, and we can... people aren't bowing down and praying to the statue of Abraham Lincoln, but Abraham Lincoln has taken on kind of a deified level of appreciation in American culture, whether it's right. deserved or not. And then there's some debate over that, actually. And I think some of the accusations against him are unfair, and I think some of them are fair. You know, Jefferson, same thing. And less so, it seems to me, Washington. I think there's more of a reverence for Jefferson and Lincoln than there is Washington. And it might be because there's statues of the other two and there's not one of George. I don't know.
Isn't there a statue of George Washington riding a horse?
I'm sure there's statues, yeah. But the main one
right.
is just this big
memorial.
Stick.
Right.
You know? Anyway.
But it's taller than the others.
It is. You know, I didn't realize this. I just learned this recently. But at the time of its construction, it was the tallest man-made structure in the world.
In the world?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I did not know. Now it's dwarfed by yes. so many things, but yeah.
So back to the Catholic Church and the statues they have. And real right near my house is Mount St. Mary's University. In fact, you can see the shrine. You can see
this
big, giant statue of Mary.
A lot of people go there to walk the gardens
and
stuff.
I think it's Mary.
Yeah, I think so.
Mount St. Mary's, right? Yeah. So you can see that from my house, in fact. You can see it. It's only a few miles away. And it's very impressive looking. It's covered in gold and all that.
Do you pray in this direction three times a day or anything?
I don't, but there are people that do. And that, I think, is an example of an actual idol that should be destroyed, right? Because people are actually reverencing the statue and talking to the dead when they're near the statue. And I think that is wrong, and it's ungodly, and it should cease. I think that's very different from a political or historical remembrance of somebody, you know, if it's not being worshipped.
I think I'm going to put this in the category of statues. They might be permissible, but not all things are helpful.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to put it in that category. If we have exercise some wisdom of when and where and how and why.
Muslims don't have, strict Muslims don't have any pictures of people either. They won't even put up pictures. And the reason was they didn't want anybody worshipping Muhammad as God, so they didn't want any likeness of him. So whatever he's been played.
Well, how would you ever prove or disprove if somebody was a ghost or not?
So, you know, they don't. I mean, that's where they have a lot of designs and things like that, but not actual statues of people. And many Muslim homes don't have pictures of people on the walls either.
Interesting. Did not know that. Yeah, a little cultural lesson here on the Faith Debate towards the end. I think it's 2 weeks in a row. Imran got the last word. Good for you. Imran Rasby, also Daniel Rasby on the show. I'm Troy Skinner. You can find the Rasbys at conqueredbylove.org. All their contact information is going to be there. That's their ministry. You can find me online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. That's the church I pastor, householdoffaithinchrist.com. Of course, you can find this show and this radio station and all things related to the Faith Debate at WFMD.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week again as the passage of time continues, because it's very significant, the passage of time. In fact, 167 and a half hours will pass. Till then, God bless.